Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of Missing Frames. I'm Sean Eastridge, and I wanted to take a moment to give you a brief rundown of what you can expect from this podcast. So the concept is basically, these are the movies that have been missing in our lives, whether we haven't seen them because we just never wanted to watch them or because we've never gotten around to it. We are going to finally sit down and watch a ton of movies that we need to see. Now, what you're about to hear is kind of a treat. I sat down with Richie Pepio and Alex Beard, my co-hosts, to record a pilot episode as a pitch of sorts to the Nerd Party to see if they would be interested in picking us up. So what we have is the audio of that first recording. Now, we did not have the best equipment when we set about recording this, as you will no doubt tell. Since we have gotten better equipment, and I promise you the sound quality will be much better in future episodes, but I wanted to give you fair warning. We didn't want to get rid of this episode because, first of all, we're a little vain and we like it. But second, I thought it would be just a great way to kick things off with the show is by focusing on what is widely regarded to be the greatest movie of all time. I think I actually say that in the episode, so forgive me for repeating myself. But anyway, just wanted to give everyone a heads up. Brace yourself for some rough audio, but other than that, we hope you enjoy and we'll tune into future episodes. Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this, the very first and possibly last episode of this podcast. I'm Sean Eastridge.
I'm Richie Pepio.
And I'm Alex Beard.
And for our first show, we figured what would be better to start with than the greatest film, what is widely considered the greatest film of all time, Citizen Kane, because Mr. Alex Beard has never seen it.
No, I hadn't. Well, I have now.
You've seen it now. But have you felt inadequate in multiple ways in just your everyday life because of this?
Well, people would talk about seeing that film, and they would bring up that film a lot. Like, I feel like people talk about Citizen Kane more than they do a lot of other
classic films, or just general
they
hygiene.
They just bring it up. They rather than shower, they talk about Citizen Kane. It can be a little disgusting and frustrating.
It's a phenomenon in every possible way.
Well, I had never heard of Citizen Kane until I watched the AFI Top 100. That was like in 1997, so I was still only like 10 years old when that came out, but I had never heard of it.
It was the same with me. I think I had first seen it because I'd started to get into movies and I'd heard about the American Film Institute and was looking at their top 100 movies of all time, and it was like, Citizen Kane, I should watch that. And I was about 13 or 14 and I sat down with my dad and my brother, and we did not pay attention to it at all because we were so bored. And then I came around a couple years later and watched it again and was able to appreciate it a little bit more.
I watched it when I was 15, and I actually really liked it.
Yeah?
But I did like old movies. I don't know. I liked watching old movies for the sake of old movies, and I remember like kind of the same reason. Like I got that from the library, and Maltese Falcon from the library, and maybe something, and probably The Searchers. I don't really like all the old stuff, but I don't know. My family was very like, old jokes, old comedy.
Right.
So I was, and I kind of forced myself in some ways to like some of the stuff that maybe I would have found boring otherwise as a kid. But in retrospect, I still really like it a lot.
Yeah. So just to give a brief history of the movie, and I'll keep it brief because I'm more interested in hearing what Alex thought about it, and I'm sure all three of you out there listening, which is probably just
the three of us re-listening,
are interested in hearing this too. But Citizen Kane, so this is 1941, so like late 30s, early 40s, Orson Welles, who was a huge theater guy, he was getting into radio and becoming a big deal, and he'd just done the War of the Worlds broadcast, which is historic because people heard it and actually thought there was an alien invasion happening in wherever it was supposed to be taking place.
New Jersey.
So he had developed quite a reputation, and that kind of launched him into the stratosphere of like, finally Hollywood was paying attention. So he made an unprecedented deal with RKO Pictures and his theater, Mercury Theater, and he basically set up an unheard of contract, which was he would have full, complete control over a movie. He would be able to write it. RKO would have to approve the script, but from that point on, he would have total control of the film. He would be able to choose the actors. He would have final cut. basically, this was, even in this day and age, it's tough to get Final Cut on a movie. Back then, this was like practically unheard of because it was the studio system and everybody was kind of very focused. They weren't so much interested in the individual's point of view or the individual artistic achievement as much as they were with just churning out a product. So they were very much, this was a huge deal. And a lot of people in Hollywood made fun of it. They said it was going to be the downfall of RKO Pictures, of Orson Welles, because they just never heard of it. But what ended up happening is because of that creative control and because of Orson Welles' theater background, he made a movie that was unlike anything anybody had ever seen, to the point where, like, nobody saw it. The movie barely gained back its budget. So it was nominated for a couple Academy Awards. It only won for original screenplay. And there's a huge controversy because Herman J. Mankiewicz, he co-wrote it with Orson Welles, and there's a huge controversy as to who actually wrote the script. And Welles always said, well, I hired Mankiewicz to do it, so technically I can do whatever I want. And if I want to put my name on it, I can put my name on it. Over the years, Citizen Kane has clearly developed a reputation that is unheard of. It had so many innovations, it's from cinematography to just the structure of its storytelling. It wasn't linear. It was out of sequence. It was told mostly in flashback, and very, very fascinating stuff. The makeup, the music, all of it was kind of revolutionary. So, guys, that's our history lesson for Citizen Kane. Now, obviously, Alex, being the one of the three of us who has never seen Citizen Kane before, what did you think? I mean, this is considered to be the greatest movie of all time. How do you feel about that?
I thought it was a good film. I will say, though, I was very jaded watching the film, just because I've experienced so many years of cinematography and filmmaking in general that focuses so heavily on a lot of the things that were kind of pioneered by Citizen Kane. So I'm watching this film and I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen this before. I've seen this film before.
Right. You know,
even the storyline I've seen before. But I also realized that the film is, what, 75 some odd years old?
Yeah.
So that, to me, I mean, like, that says something, and I completely understand that. I enjoyed it. I would say I think my favorite moments in the film were always the really, like, strange ones. Like the
like what specifically?
The one that I was just watching, I was watching the film on the couch, and it was the parakeet.
Yeah.
When the bird, when there's this film transition. So basically, to set the scene, they're in a room, and the camera angle changes, and basically the transition into the next room for the continuation of the film. It's just this large parakeet because it is so close to the camera lens, and it just goes.
And it
terrified me, and I was like, "What the hell was like? What kind of artistic decision was that?"
I don't know. Does anybody understand what that represents at all?
It's funny, because when I watched that when I was younger, when I was 15, I was like, whoa, what does that mean? And I actually looked that up, because I thought, that is such a weird choice. So interesting. And you can see, like, I forget it. I think you can almost see, like, some character through the eye.
Yes.
Because the eye is reflective.
Yes, the eye. Yep.
And I looked it up, and apparently, of everything was so deliberate in this movie, that was a mistake. The eye was not supposed to be transparent. It was supposed to be just a parakeet that flies in, and it's a scene transition. You're in a new location. That's it. I thought that was supposed to have some kind of deep meaning, and of all the things in that movie, this does not have a deep meaning. It's just a parakeet.
Just that weird thing that happens.
Just something random. So, was there anything... Like, so, you're watching it. Was there anything that you could kind of... Because I get the jaded mentality of watching Citizen Kane, because it has such a reputation. Was there anything watching it where you were kind of like, immediately like, oh yeah, that's very cool, or that's very impressive, and I can totally see why this movie has developed this reputation? Was there any particular, like, performance or scene where you were kind of like, that's pretty cool?
That's hard. So I would say, I think my favorite actor that was in this film was Everett Sloan. His character was very interesting and dynamic, and he was like, I don't know, I guess you're like 1940s stereotypical, like, Jewish businessman of sorts. And I just thought his character was so funny, because as he got older, like, his character had such a, I think it had the most dynamic change, because as a younger person in the film, like in the younger, earlier days of this story, he was like really clumsy and like just weird, like a weird ass guy. Like, I don't know what his deal was, and I couldn't put my thumb on it. And as he gets older, he's like, oh yeah, I know everything about Kane. Like, let me tell you, when he's talking to the reporter. Yes. And that to me was just like, oh, he went from being this like weird, like crazy, kind of observant guy to like, oh, I know everything and I'm very professional and I don't care. And like, let me tell you this story.
Right.
And I thought that was like an interesting choice.
And his this is the guy behind the desk in his giant chair with the terrifying portrait of Citizen Kane staring down at him.
That's right.
One of the things that this movie innovated really was staging. And I don't know if you noticed this. I know you've done a lot. You have a theater background, so you're able to appreciate it from that standpoint. But one of the innovations of Citizen Kane, one of the biggest ones, is just the cinematography in general.
Greg Toland?
Was it Greg Toland? Yeah, is that the cinematographer's name?
Yeah.
You're right. You're a genius. Hey, you should be doing this. I don't know what I'm doing. But so Greg Toland, who, his accomplishments with the movie were so huge that Orson Welles actually, with his huge ego, he put him on the same title card as him at the end of the movie in the end credits, because Toland's contributions were so significant. But one of the biggest things is, as far as the staging went and the sets, a lot of times back in that day, movies were, they kind of took advantage of the fact that they were movies. They weren't that interested in staging or as much, not that focused on what you see and what it means in terms of cinematic language, the mise-en-scene. But they were more interested in like, okay, we cut to a close-up. We take full advantage of the fact that you can have a camera in your face and you can emote. And Welles doesn't really do that. He focuses on long takes and staging the action in a way that your eye will naturally travel. And it's something that, again, we kind of take for granted in this day and age because we see it and it's so commonplace in movies. But this film kind of invented cinematic language in a way. There's D.W. Griffith and Birth of a Nation and all those things he did, but like, I think Citizen Kane really kind of pioneered in a whole new way just films, and especially of the sound era. You have all these different techniques that have kind of reached a culmination in this movie. And as somebody like with a theater background, did you notice that? Is that stuff that you're like, that you pay attention to, or were you kind of more like watching the movie and enjoying it as just
no,
the story
yeah, I mean, nature. I definitely could see a lot of those elements coming into play. And one of the like the first things that I noticed was just the use of, and I mean, it just makes sense for the time period, the use of a lot of like painted psychs and like matte painted backgrounds, where it's like, oh, this building isn't there, but I'm going to paint it and give like some depth to the painting. So that like really influenced me, because I know as an actor that would be rather challenging to be like, oh, I'm in this giant mansion that isn't really actually giant. That's right behind me. The only thing that's real is this telephone pole that's right next to me. Like that kind of interaction changes the whole feel, you know, being in a sound studio versus, you know, being on a stage where maybe you only have a couple props in front of you. So that definitely felt like that. But the other thing that I would say too is performances did feel muted, I would say, on like overall. Like I didn't feel like it was the traditional, because I know a lot of times when you get a bunch of theater actors and you throw them in front of the camera and they haven't done any camera work, you can get performances that are designed for an audience. Like that is
so
at
much
a distance,
bigger,
so much larger. And it wasn't that. It was a lot more muted character actions and choices.
Which is crazy, because the cast was, he pulled them all from his theater.
Yes.
They were, they never,
like
most
a lot
of them had
of
never
newbies.
Been on screen before.
And you look at Kane's mom, probably the most muted performance of all, right?
Right.
Agnes Moorehead, she's, like, she's just
staring
at
Charles, Charles, come in, please. So definitely, you know, took that as a stylistic option. And it was, I think, a good choice. Definitely different and interesting.
Yeah. And a lot, even, and not just like film actors from that era, even they kind of tended to over emote. It was, you know, and especially that may have been a byproduct of just the silent era, and they, you know, sound had just kind of been coming in. Yeah. So maybe people were still used to it. But yeah, Citizen Kane is a very subtle movie. It's got a lot of subtle performances. Sometimes I think somebody watching it for the first time and not really appreciating it might even be turned off by that. Like, they're kind of like, eh. You know, Orson Welles kind of gives a very big performance.
Yeah, he's a larger-than-life character, too. Yes. The big characters, all, like, the all... Anytime there's a bunch of men gathered around, like, smoking cigars, like, just, like, talking business, they get, like, very animated. They get animated, but it is... It's kind of a product of the situation.
Yes.
The types of larger-than-life
characters. Yeah, there were a couple scenes where, mm-hmm. like, they were partying... And all I could think was, this is dumb.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Orson Welles would get, like, exactly like you're saying, where he's, like, having a, like, I don't know, a rambunctious evening, and he wants everyone else to have fun, so he just, like, stands up and starts dancing around,
yeah.
and it's like,
right.
shut up. Like, what are you doing? Like, a real-life businessman
sure.
who's gonna crush the world is not, like, dancing and tapping his heel.
To play devil's advocate a bit, and that might not even be the right term, I don't even know, but I think the idea behind that, and his friend, I can't remember his friend who, early on, he's like, here's my statement of principles.
Joseph Cotton.
Yes.
Leland.
Yes.
Yeah.
Leland is watching him, and you get the sense that he feels the same way that you feel, like you were talking about. He's watching his friend who was very, like, I'm going to make a difference, and is kind of being corrupted by the celebrity of it. And
yeah.
he's like, yes, I'm dancing, and I'm ridiculous.
Yeah.
And Leland is kind of watching and sort of like... Huh.
Yeah, it's definitely
okay.
It's definitely a choice,
yeah.
for
yeah.
sure. And it's one that works with the storyline.
Right.
Of, you know, kind of watching this man fall from grace in terms of his... He had, you know, this declaration
yeah.
of all his aspirations of making a great, you know, paper.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that completely failed.
Yeah.
I think it works to that point, too. I think Kane being the showman... He is trying to control every aspect of his life and
yeah.
then control every aspect of everybody's life around him. He's almost like the ringleader. This is like a circus he's building, he's created.
Right.
He's trying to control more and more things when he's running for public office. He is like the leader of this huge circus that gets
yeah.
almost out of control for him. Even at the end, he's got this huge castle, palatial estate with animals and parakeets.
Yeah.
And, he felt
very Pablo Escobar to me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, this man, you know, like can swoop in and like on the surface basically be super nice to everyone, and everyone thinks he's, oh, this jolly old man, like what
right.
a great person, definitely gonna help us, but really just is out there to screw
and
everyone.
And speaking
up.
Of calling him a jolly old man, he looks like a jolly old man, and Orson Welles, like the first scene where you see him at the Inquirer walking in, and like. It's a great reveal where his caretaker is reading all the newspapers and like, how dare he write these headlines? And then he drops in the last cut or the last shot, he drops it, and we reveal Orson Welles sitting there as he actually looked. The movie takes him from age like 20 to age 70.
The makeup
and
is
the
impressive.
The makeup is astonishing.
It's
like,
impressive.
And what's incredible about it is the makeup was done by a makeup assistant who was not actually... he was an apprentice, essentially, and Welles had seen his work and was like, you come work for me. But he technically wasn't the head of the makeup department. And it's insane. Like, I've seen old people makeup in modern movies that doesn't look half as good as this movie from 1941.
Yeah, I watched it in HD, and I will say that the backdrop, so like the painted background, it's like, oh, that's fake. I can
yes.
see that that's
mm-hmm.
a painting. But like a lot of the makeup, it's like, well, nope, that's good.
That looks good.
Like, that
when
was
I was
a,
when I was
use.
A kid, and it's Maurice Cederman who did the makeup. When I was a kid, it baffled me. I honestly just didn't understand. I was like, was he an old man? Is Orson
Welles?
Well,
when you look
just,
at old pictures of Orson Welles, he ends up kind of
looking
like Kane.
Old Kane.
Old
yeah.
Kane.
So I just remember as a kid not being fully sure what his real age was because I was so convinced by the makeup.
They filmed that movie over 80 years.
They did, so suck it, Richard Linklater. but let's talk a little bit about Citizen Kane's reputation. Like, as we said at the beginning of this episode, it is considered by so many people to be one of the greatest movies, if not the greatest. And tons of people put it at the top of their list of the greatest movies ever. I can say honestly, Citizen Kane is a movie I admire more than I really enjoy. Like, I admire its technical aspects. I admire the storytelling innovations it has, but it's a movie I don't really connect to. And I almost like it less because of its reputation. Like, I get, like, I almost appreciate it more watching it from a scholarly point of view and having somebody sit down and say, like, here's what's great about this movie and look at these innovations. And it's like, oh yeah, that's amazing. But just as a movie, I don't really get that into it. I don't really enjoy it that much. And part of me, I can't help wondering, and I wonder if you guys feel this way too, do you think the reputation of Citizen Kane, anytime you call something the greatest of anything, it's automatically got to work uphill to earn that reputation? And if it doesn't, then it gets like saddled with terms like overrated or it's stupid. People might appreciate it less and might not respect it as the piece of the quality piece of work that it is because of that. Do you feel that? Did you feel that watching it for the first time, like that the reputation of Citizen Kane was kind of hurting your viewing experience of it?
So I don't ride, nor do I collect tickets on the hype train. So I don't, when people say, oh, that's the greatest thing of all time, like, I take that with a grain of salt. Right. So I don't give a whole lot of emphasis, but I think if I did, that would, you know, darken my view of pretty much everything.
So not even subconsciously, you don't think it was affecting you?
No, maybe in the fact that I didn't watch the film. Yeah. Like, maybe because I guess maybe that shows how much I didn't trust them. Like, that's probably not the best movie ever. Right. I'm not going to watch
some
that.
Some black and white old man. I hate it.
Dumb. But yeah, no, I mean, I try not to let that stuff taint me. And just like, you know, with movies that come out today, I might check out what the... like what the you know, Rotten Tomatoes score of a film might be, but it, on the whole, really, I like some crappy movies, so I'll pretty much just, you know, take whatever it is.
Perfect. Well, the first step is admitting it. Yeah, and yeah. I'm really proud of you. Richie, how do you feel about it?
I look at it kind of the opposite way, because I, as somebody who had never heard of Citizen Kane before I saw this AFI thing, and I kind of wanted to see it afterwards. I mean, there was never really a big, like, build-up in my life around the people that I knew of, like, Citizen Kane, you have to see. I mean, there was for The Godfather. There was for, you know, I don't know, like, other big movies that come out. So, for me, I kind of always thought of it like, well, I guess AFI put together a list, and they honestly asked critics, and when critics were asked that they... Nobody was, like, pounding down my door telling me, watch Citizen Kane! So I kind of trusted the critics on that one, since they were like, oh, this is a list AFI put together, and everybody kind of came to this conclusion. It wasn't like everybody was, like, pushing for this one to beat Godfather or Wizard of Oz, because I'm so sick and tired of those movies, right, you know, taking the top slot. So for me, when I did watch it, I really liked it. And then also, I mean, we kind of look at... We look to Rotten Tomatoes now to kind of judge for us and tell us, well, I'm not going to go see that movie because even though the trailer looked good, it only got, you know, 50% right. Rotten Tomatoes.
It's insane. So, and even marketers use that to their advantage where they put it's certified, it has an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes, so you should come see it.
Right.
So it's gotten to that point where, like, it almost feels like critics' opinions have become more valuable in that way because it's almost become more mainstream. You know, it's tough for me. I enjoy Citizen Kane, but there's something about the story that I think I almost feel like people who are really into films are really obsessed with stories about powerful men getting their comeuppance or like losing everything and being lonely or whatever. And I just never fully connect to Kane as a character. I admire it. I admire the movie and I admire the story and the technical aspects, and I think the performances, everything technically is great. But as a film, as an involving storytelling effort, I'm not that invested in any of it. It's like a historical artifact that I walk into a museum, I see it, and I say, oh, that looks great, but I don't have an emotional connection to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if I'm the only one who feels that way.
No, I mean, I feel that way too. I mean, I definitely felt that movie of being 2 hours in length. it was one of those things where as soon as the story started, it almost felt like a Shakespearean show, mm-hmm. where it was like, oh, we know exactly what's going to happen to this guy. Because yeah. we were given the newsreel at the beginning yeah. that told his life story.
And exactly.
Like, we get it. And, like, it's this rich guy who died yeah. and now he's, like, gone yeah. and he's left all this, like, you know, fame and fortune. In this giant palace. And that was the whole film.
Yeah.
Like, that was
yeah,
it.
That's
like,
it.
We watched this guy go from, like, you know, being a child to being super rich and then dying. Like, that was it.
And part of the reason they put that montage at the beginning is because the storytelling was so innovative and you see it so kind of out of sequence.
Yeah.
That was a really, really smart way to orient the audience yeah. right off the bat. Because
yeah.
the audience, the movie when it first came out, nobody knew what to make of it because it was so innovative and so crazy that people kind of were put off by it. Like, they yeah. were kind of like, we've never seen anything like this. It feels a little pretentious. I don't know. I was
really also hoping that at the very end, obviously this, if you've been listening so far, spoiler alert for everything,
yeah.
But at the end of the film, when they kind of give the moral of the story of like, you can't reduce a man's life to a single word.
Right.
We didn't need that. Like, yeah. I would much rather have just like lived in that moment of just mm-hmm. that me thinking that in my own head.
Yeah.
Coming to that conclusion.
It was almost a little too explicit.
Yes.
And then, again, you almost get that from the visual of Rosebud being burned.
Yes.
Like, Rosebud
yes,
was just a
visual.
Sled. It didn't necessarily right. mean anything big.
And I think that was them working to, potentially, them working to the audience of the time.
Of the time yeah.
Of being like, we need to make sure that they know so that way when they leave, they're not pissed off.
Right.
Whereas now, you could show you could show anything and you could leave it on a cliffhanger and boom, that's
yeah,
fine.
People will come back for more.
You want people to come back yeah. for you. They want cliffhangers now.
Yeah.
We're going to take a moment here, everybody, to give a shout out to something very special. Now, who doesn't like discounted stuff? I mean, I know I sure do. So let's take a moment to talk about Loot Crate. I mean, if you are on a quest for epic gear, housewares, collectibles, they offer an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you want to be super cool and get really fancy, you can get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. Now, for the month of November, we've got something really special for you. So we have a 100% exclusive crate featuring items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Big Trouble in Little China, all kinds of wonderful magic stuff. Now, you have until November 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, you're done. You are no longer eligible for this. So all you have to do is go to www.lootcrate.com/nerdparty. That's NERDPARTY. And enter our code, NERDPARTY, all one word, at the checkout, and you will save on your subscription. Not too shabby. So there you go. Check it out. Now, what do you say we get back to the show?
I really love the movie. I don't have a problem with people saying it's the greatest movie of all time. The only thing I have a problem with was the build up to seeing this movie was that like you know, there's the twist at the end that Rosebud
yeah.
is, spoiler alert, the sled, which wasn't a twist to me. I mean, it was just like this is the period on the end of the sentence that is Citizen Kane. This is like the coda
yeah.
to the movie. It's a great ending, but for me, watching it, not knowing what Rosebud was, but having heard that Rosebud was like this big deal, I was almost expecting like a Statue of Liberty, Planet of the Apes style reveal
right.
at the end. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, it's the sled.
It's just a thing.
All right, it's just a thing. Which that actually is, that's kind of what
point.
They want. The
yeah.
point is, it's just a thing. But for me, like, that was my big expectation. And watching the movie, I was like, okay, I really liked it. But, I wish nobody told me that, like, you're going to have your mind blown when you find out what this sled is.
I kind of want to go back and watch just the beginning when he's a child and he has the sled to see if the sled says Rosebud.
There's,
at that
I
point.
Think there's a couple. I don't know if you can maybe
know.
Make it out. But,
yeah.
Actually, funny story, because William Randolph Hearst was the actual newspaper magnate that most of Citizen Kane is based on, and ended up blacklisting. Orson Welles and tried to keep the movie from being made because he had such a, it was such a powerful figure in Hollywood.
So yeah, Welles got in a lot of trouble for everything. So aside from just being like the new kid on campus, getting to do whatever he wanted and people being upset about it, he also pissed off William Randolph Hearst, who was the big mogul that Kane was quote unquote based on, even though Welles insisted, please don't sue me, it's not about you.
And that's the thing about Citizen Kane that I think allows it to kind of withstand this this talk of it being the greatest movie of all time, is that not only is the movie itself portraying the story of a larger-than-life figure, but the story behind the movie is almost larger-than-life. It's almost tragedy.
Yeah.
Almost tragic, following Orson Welles' life.
And you can, I think the best way to look at it is as an examination of a tragic life, because I think that's how you get the most out of it. Watching this guy who basically gets everything he could possibly want and then ruins it, and then ruins other people's lives because he wants to just, he wants everything to fit into his little world, kind of like the globe. See what I did there? But he wants everything to kind of fit his standard, you know, and when he gets married to the not singer, the quote unquote singer in the newspapers later on, and he's trying to, to him, he's trying to make her, build her up to help her achieve her dreams, but there's a really sinister undercurrent of he just wants to be in control and basically provide her with that fame. And she doesn't even necessarily want it. She just wants to kind of live her life. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, so as far as Citizen Kane goes, is there a particular scene that will always stand out, to you as like, this is the moment I love? Or like it could be anything, like a scene, a moment, or like let's say like a camera move, anything that really stands out to you in this movie where you're like, boom, that's awesome. And I like, regardless of my personal opinion, I can respect that as like, this is crazy good.
I think there's a lot of amazing visual points, like the especially the opera scene is probably my favorite visual moment to watch, just because of the shot going up into the rafters and cutting to the stage hands. But I think the scene that I actually always remember from watching it that one time, because I thought it did the best job at deftly like telling a story, telling a progression of time, is the montage at the table between him and his first wife.
Yes.
And I remember even watching it when I was younger and thinking like, oh, that's really cool, because I think like in an old movie, in older movies, I expect kind of dialogue to be more on the nose, people to kind of say how they feel more and be a little more, I guess, melodramatic. And it simply shows us a passage of time through like a line of dialogue each, and then cuts to later, and they're still at the same table, but they're getting older, they're facial expressions are starting to get a little more sour. Mm-hmm. They're getting a little less interested in each other. And really, in 2 minutes, we're told an entire, you know, I don't know, decade or so worth of, of marriage.
And you can see, and then the best part is the punchline at the end is she's reading The Chronicle, which is his rival newspaper. He's reading The Enquirer. And then the camera pulls out and the table has increased in length. So they kind of were very close to each other. And now, I don't know if it's actually increased in length, but they are
they
very
shown that far
they,
away when
they
it
were
started.
Sitting very close to each other when it started, and then it feels like it's spread out. But Alex, is there anything that when you watched this movie you were just very impressed by, like without like taking all of Citizen Kane's reputation out of it, that you just watched it and you're like, that was pretty cool?
Definitely the parakeet. I think my favorite point was it was probably the newsreel at the top, just because that is so. It's such a slice out of history. We don't have newsreels like that anymore. So that was just a fun thing to watch. And I also was a little bit, not going to lie, confused at the top. I was like, what the hell am I watching?
He's dead already.
Because it was like, or is the whole film going to be like a newsreel?
Yeah.
Where it's like, boom, boom, boom,
and it's
cut,
so,
cut, cut.
It's so legit, like, I remember as a kid thinking the same thing, like, oh, is this a documentary? It does a very good job. They got it so on point. Exactly. And Robert Wise edited the movie, which is crazy because Robert Wise went on to direct the greatest of Star Trek films, Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Which is a movie that needs more editing.
It needs more editing.
Of all things.
Just to be clear, Star Trek The Motion Picture is not the greatest Star Trek movie of all time. But he did direct The Sound of Music, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah,
he's
which
a great
Star Trek
He's a great director. And, I, you know, truthfully, I love Star Trek, even though That movie will put you to sleep.
Motion picture like is the best movie to fall asleep to. And that's something, Alex, have you seen Motion Picture?
No.
We'll save it for a couple episodes later.
One thing I really truly admire, I'm a big fan of Alfonso Cuarón, who's done Y Tu Mamá También, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, which I think is unanimously picked as the best Potter movie. More recently, he did Gravity. He also did Children of Men. But I really admire the way he does a lot of one-shot sequences, and the way he stages his films and the way he stages the action is really fantastic. And watching Citizen Kane again, I realized that Cuarón gets a lot of it from Welles. And I mean, not just him, but lots of amazing directors, from Spielberg to Scorsese to all over the place, get a lot of it. But what I really admired this time around watching it again was Welles' staging and the technique he put into... Not like, he really wanted it to be naturalistic, and really he wanted the action to flow in a very naturalistic way. So he lets scenes play out in long shots. The framing and the way he stages things, it's just insane. Like the transitions between scenes, how one part will fade in while another part will fade out. And then that, you know, you've never seen anything like it at the time. And even now, even though it's been hammered into us, you just can't help but admire the sheer gall he had. Just that was his first movie, and it's like nobody had ever done anything like that before, so it's pretty great. And even though I don't love Citizen Kane, I have a great deal of admiration for it, and people should definitely see it. If you're any kind of film fan at all, you should see it. You owe it to yourself to watch this movie just to get a feel for it.
I think the one thing that would change if this movie was made again today, I think the ditching the mid-Atlantic accent, so that's that like mm-hmm. old-timey yeah. film accent that mm-hmm. everyone learned in that era in boarding
right.
school. If you were to ditch that, that film would be so much better. Because I feel like a lot of the characters feel a little fake with this like accent yeah. that they all have. But I think if that were to get canned,
right.
yeah. it would feel like a much more like a film based in realism.
You get a lot of, that's the thing too about that, because most of the characters are very upper crust. I mean, if
yeah.
you had like a lower class character who was
yes.
involved, even though you don't really in this movie, other than I guess what the butler at the end.
Yeah, butler at the end.
But he has
and the,
like
the waiter
farm,
they're talking
so.
To at the beginning.
If you had more like, well, sir, I,
well,
Mr.
Sonny,
Kane,
yeah.
Say hello to my Tommy gun.
it's true. I think it is. It's just funny because I think Citizen Kane, because its innovations have been so recycled and used in every other movie, you watch it and you really don't notice it.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things where you watch it and you're like, oh, that was a good movie. And then somebody, as I said, it's almost more fun to watch it from a scholarly
yeah.
perspective.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have the Blu-ray or DVD of Citizen Kane. Roger Ebert does a great commentary, and he just listening to him break down the movie's innovations and stuff mm-hmm. was almost to me more enjoyable than watching the movie. I enjoy it more as an examination, as a product of its time, and as the innovative piece of work that it is, more than as a movie I actually enjoy watching. But I don't know, is there anything else anybody has to add?
Well,
about
just
this
bringing
movie?
Up Roger Ebert, it is a very meta theatrical movie.
Yeah.
Very, very meta. Especially for its time, where meta wasn't really kind of
right.
a thing that was happening in cinema or even on stage. Orson Welles, his character Kane, talks about the address radio, referencing almost, you know, his radio past. They have different genres of film in, or different filming styles in this one movie, like Newsreel. Roger Ebert talked about shadow play, where there's like he's doing shadow puppets on the wall of
right.
his future second wife, her apartment. There's, you know, stage play. There's documentary.
He tried, the whole idea was Welles was trying to incorporate every single trick in the book,
yeah.
every single visual trick he could think of, and put it in the movie. And he pretty much does. It's pretty insane. I think we've exhausted it. So let's say on a scale of 1 to 5 rosebuds, how would you... This is not a reputation rating. This is a honest reaction. How do you rank, how do you rate Citizen Kane? How many rosebuds do you give it, Richie?
Really quick first. Before
that,
I just want to say, I looked up Maurice Cederman, who did the old man makeup.
What else did
and
he
his
do?
His last movie was They Saved Hitler's Brain.
Well, that's
so
next. That's our
that.
Next episode.
And that's going to get Six Rosebuds.
That's going to get six Rosebuds.
I'll be honest. I really like this movie a lot. It's not my favorite movie of all time, but I think it deserves every single Rosebud that it got. I'm going to give it five. Rosebuds.
Alex, what about you?
So I'm going to have to break mine down into a technical category and then a storytelling category.
Okay.
So technically, I'd give it five Rosebuds. I think storytelling, I'd give it three.
Yeah.
So we're going to go with an average of like four Rosebuds.
I will go with Alex and give it a four. I really do admire this movie. I can't say I love it, but then other days I'm like, oh my God, it's amazing. Like, just the stuff that's in it is incredible, but it's tough for me to really connect to it. I admire the structure, the craziness of the structure, the storytelling, and how it kind of innovated in that way. But I don't feel much of a connection to it, and I'm not that invested in it. So I agree, and I will give it four. And that's that. So that's the definitive word on Citizen Kane.
Love it.
Right here. You heard it here first.
So what's next week?
So next week we'll wait and see. We're gonna surprise everybody, including ourselves. But Richie, where can people find you online if they want to connect with you?
It's easy. You could find me at Richie Pepio on Twitter. RichiePepio. Or you can find me on Tumblr at Mind Control Alt Delete. MindControlAltDelete.
We'll find it. You'll find it later. Alex, what about you?
You can find me pretty much everywhere at,
including your backyard.
That's right. It's at Mr. Alex Beard. That's MRALEXBEARD.
Yes, and you can find me on Twitter at YayShondorman. We want to hear what you think about Citizen Kane. Just honest opinion. Let's just get it all out there. I know a lot of people maybe have the burden of feeling like they have to talk about it like it's the greatest thing ever. Don't feel like that. You can admit this is a safe zone. You can tell us how you really feel. But that's it for this first episode. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure. It always has been, and it always will be, your friend. But thank you both so much. Taking the time to chat about Citizen Kane,
the greatest
film of all time.
Really,
and we will bid you all, our audience members, aka the three of us, adieu.